From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in an unnamed classroom, probably a high school classroom, somewhere in the United States. New York Times reporter Katie Rossman shared a photo taken in the class and explained that the teacher asked her students to turn their phone volume up and create a collective record of all the notifications they received in just a single class period, fourth period, middle of the school day, just one period. The photo went viral. It shows categories and the tallies of every notification for the text messages students received, emails, notifications from Instagram, Snapchat, Twitter, or Facebook. In just that one period, in one classroom, there were more than 1,200 notifications for the class. Now, we can't verify that this is true. We have no reason to doubt it, though. And in fact, teachers across the country have responded to the image by sharing their own stories of student distraction. One teacher replied to the New York Times reporter saying, quote, "Parents have FaceTimed their kids in the middle of my class, and you'd be surprised how many don't even see that as an issue," end quote. The San Franciscoist online magazine ran the headline, "We are raising a generation of constantly distracted chatbots," and an experiment by one beleaguered teacher illustrates this in a most upsetting fashion. And even the co-founder of Android weighed in. Rich Miner tweeted, quote, "I worry about the smartphone-centric, interruption-driven world I helped create, and how it is going to impact people who grew up thinking this is just how things are," end quote. So what should we do about this? Is this really just how things are? Can we reverse some of the creep of distraction? Our guests this hour include in studio Leah Stacey, a professor in professional practice in English and communication at Nazareth College. Leah, welcome back to the program. Nice to have you.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Also with us is Regan Wagner, an English and communications and media major at Nazareth College. Welcome to you as well.
Thank you very much.
And on the line with us is Dr. Deepesh Navsaria, professor of pediatrics at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health. Dr. Navsaria, welcome back to the program. Thanks for taking the time.
Thank you. Pleased to be here.
I'll start with you, Dr. Navsaria, and I'll say again, I can't verify the photo's true, but again, there's no reason to doubt it. And it's remarkable how many teachers at the college level, at the high school level, even at the middle school level to some extent, have responded to the saying, yep, that could be my class, and that's frustrating. What did you make of it when you first saw it?
Oh, it was completely in line with what I've heard from other people. I actually teach a class on Saturdays with 13-year-olds, and we have a phone basket that we ask students to put their phones into when they enter the classroom. And even though they're on silent, you can hear the little buzzing and vibrations going off periodically. So it was not a surprise for me to see that there's that many notifications.
Any surprise to you, Professor Stacey?
No, and I haven't put into practice the basket, but I have been tempted many times.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Regan is here, one of Professor Stacey's students, who also can probably weigh in on the distraction side. We'll talk about this, but from a student perspective, did this surprise you at all?
Oh, no, absolutely not. I hear it in class all the time.
And so part of the conversation this hour is what we do about that, because when the co-founder of Android says he doesn't want students to think this is just life now, that we're always going to be getting notifications, it sort of is. But the question is, can that change? And Dr. Navsaria, let me start with you by asking, what should we realistically be worried about here with the current state of things?
So I think that there's the main issue really here is distraction, obviously. And this is true, by the way, not only of teens and youth and children, but also adults. We're living in this always-on, always-connected world, and things are demanding your attention over and over and over again. And this photo just simply kind of highlights, I think, the experience, not just, you know, for kids, but for adults as well. It makes it difficult to focus and really immerse yourself in whatever you're supposed to be thinking about, the instruction or whatnot. We've also had people talk about how they're concerned that deep reading, that really losing yourself in a book, has become less and less common as people are moving onto e-readers and sometimes not turning off their notifications, so that their flow, their ability to really take in nuanced arguments and positions that, you know, develop over paragraphs and pages and chapters may be actually affected by this.
Yeah, on that subject, Dr. Navsaria, I'm thinking of, you know, young kids who are growing up reading, and, you know, everybody wants their kid to be a great reader. I think it's going to be harder for parents, and I'm in this category now, to get their kids to be those deep readers, because there's always something buzzing. There's always something indicating to them, hey, check this out. You want to see this. Here's an update on this. You got a mess. And it happens very, very young. So this is kind of a an anecdotal issue as far as I know. I don't know how much research there is, Dr. Nafsaria. But how much do we need to be realistically worried as parents that it's going to be hard to turn our kids into great readers?
I think we should be worried. And I think it's not just notifications. It's really anything that essentially attunes our brain to do brief things, to look for brief new stimuli over and over. This has actually been exploited for a long time. For example, the Baby Einstein videos that were so popular, which did absolutely zero for learning and actually pulled kids away from, you know, good things like interaction with people, which did drive development forward. Those videos were all predicated on quick scene changes, bright colors, etc., so that infants would keep on looking for the new stimulus over and over. There's also some other work. There's a great study I'm thinking of that short-term declines in cognitive performance after just 9 minutes of watching a fast-paced cartoon versus something that was slower-paced versus letting kids spend 9 minutes drawing and so on. And I'll add that, you know, I think we should be concerned about young kids because their brains are forming so quickly. But this has also been shown in adults that, you know, even someone who was a deep reader and so on, if they spend all their time around this short-term stimuli, can actually find it more difficult to do that sort of work. So we shouldn't think that our old brains, so to speak, are necessarily immune to this.
Yeah, interesting. And those who kind of grew up in the pre-cell phone era are not immune to the creep of this. So let me give you some of the stats. The total notifications and the respondents online, they've made bar graphs. So this is what students in one, probably a high school classroom, in one period, total notifications the students received. 470 text messages, 275 Instagram notifications, 160 emails, 102 Facebook notifications, 70 Snapchat notifications, 55 Group Me notifications, which is a thing that I've not heard of. That's a thing?
That's a thing.
That's a thing. 30 Twitter notifications, 27 phone calls, probably spam or college recruiters because kids don't make calls anymore. So that's what, more than 1,200 total combined in one class period. And Professor Stacy, you know, I mentioned at the outset, I don't want to be the curmudgeon who says, oh, technology is ruining things, because we're not going back to an era where there's not smartphones. We do have to live with that to some extent.
Mm-hmm.
Does that wipe away the concern about distractions? I mean, do we have to find a middle ground? How do you see, because I don't want to be a curmudgeon. I don't know how you feel about this.
Well, I think that my opinion is always growing and changing with this. There are certainly benefits, but there are some drawbacks that are very serious, I think, which we've started to touch on in this hour. So for instance, I said that I've been tempted to, you know, put into effect a basket where I collect everyone's phones. But the reality of what I teach is that a lot of times we are in a lab, or if we're not, we're using computers or phones to do our work. And so I have to give the students a little bit of trust in that I have to know that they're going to use their phones during that time for the project that we're working on, or the exercise, and not just be texting or on Instagram. Of course, that's probably a reality. And I do hear phones buzzing during class. But my students are going into a field where they're constantly going to be working with digital. And that means phones, and that means notifications. And so for me, I would rather have open conversations about how to handle that, you know, both from the mental health standpoint and also just from prioritizing and getting your work done. So I manage social media for freelance clients. And I don't have my notifications on for any of my personal channels at all, because I can check that stuff later. You know, my work is going to come first and my students are going to come first. And so that did take, I don't know, probably a period of a couple years where I had to figure out what to turn on and what to just check when I logged on to those outlets.
And those are probably ongoing conversations with students. We'll talk to Regan in just a second about that. For you, as a professor, again, I'm with you that in some ways technology is great. It does keep us connected. We can get information quickly. 1,200 plus notifications for one classroom, to me, says that's way too much. Do you agree?
Yeah, I wish we knew how many students were in the classroom, but I guess if we assume that there's, you know, 20 or 30, it's unreal, you know, how much communication is being done not face-to-face anymore, too. And I think it's also a chemistry thing. I mean, if you think about high schoolers and the dopamine that they're getting from notifications, the attention they're getting, like, I remember when I was in high school, like, that would have been a dream because that's what you want, right? I mean, I was in high school in the years of, like, Instant Messenger, when we would all put song lyrics up, and then I would have to share the computer with my brothers. And so I didn't have the luxury of, you know, having my cell phone or my own computer with me all the time. But I could see how that could become very addicting for, and we see that just with ourselves. I mean, it's so hard to put your phone down and not pick it up because you feel like you're missing out on something or you feel like you should be doing something.
Can you tell when students are not engaged with you and are distracted?
Absolutely. Yes. I think they don't know that I can sometimes. But I've just started calling people out because if I'm not going to have a phone basket and if there's going to be that trust, it's got to be a two-way conversation.
How do they respond to it when you call them out?
You know what? The kids at NAS are great. They are very respectful. And I find that once we have that initial conversation or that initial comment, it doesn't usually happen again.
Well, on the subject of addiction, before we get to Regan's story, you know, Professor Stacy raises this, that word, which is sometimes, you know, parents and lay people, Dr. Nafsari, are going to hear that word and say, are we talking about actual concern about real addiction here? What would you say to that, Dr. Nafsari?
Yeah, thanks. The word addiction can be very loaded, and I think it's sometimes on one hand I think it creates problems because we're not talking about heroin, we're not talking about a powerful physical withdrawal, right? That's going to occur if kids or others aren't allowed to use electronics or have their notification turned off or whatever the case may be. At the same time, what was said is correct, right? This is a dopamine hit. Even a toddler touching something on a screen and making it beep or something appear or whatever, there's a little bit of that kind of, hey, I did it, you know, that occurs. And yeah, I agree. You know, I do public-facing social media. I have a public-facing Facebook and Twitter account and so on. And when I get a like or a new follower or whatever the case may be, there is that little bit of little satisfaction, which I know is silly and ridiculous, right? But you do feel that. So I think that some of it is really kind of, I think some of the themes that were just laid out are really important. You know, sometimes I think kids, we assume, oh, these young people must know everything about their device and so on. I'm not necessarily sure that that's a great assumption. People may not know how to selectively turn off notifications. I've noticed as like, for example, Apple's iOS has evolved over the years, it's become easier to tune your notifications. It doesn't necessarily mean kids that necessarily know how to do that. Some of them may not know how to silence things or say, gee, I don't need to have a beep every time email comes in. You know, that can wait a few hours or whatever.
Well, Regan Wagner was chosen because I'm sure you're an old soul, you know, and you're no, I mean, I
she is actually.
I joke, but your professor wanted you to come because I know she has a lot of respect for you. And this stuff, I'm sure, is not easy to navigate. So let's talk a little bit about how you use your device and when it might feel distracting. How many apps or what do you use routinely in terms of social media and apps?
I would say a majority of what I use would normally be Instagram, Twitter, and Snapchat are regular for me. And I would actually have to agree. I'm not entirely certain how to turn off like the vibrate function on my cell phone either.
Interesting. I see. Yeah. That's so good. Dr. Nafsari was saying that. I'm thinking, come on here. But Regan's going, yeah. I mean, like, if you don't know how to turn off the vibrate function, it's easier to be distracted. When you are in class, most of your classes that you're taking, let me just rephrase this. Are there any classes where you're not allowed to have your phone with you?
Yes. I would actually say, especially at Nazareth, a majority of my classes, we are not supposed to have our phones, but a lot of people still revert back to that high school, like, phone in the lap.
Yeah, but you're not handing them into a basket, as Professor Stacy had mentioned.
No, I haven't had that happen.
Okay, so you're not supposed to use it, but some students try to circumvent that.
Right.
In the same way, they try to sneak it, and thinking that they're getting over on the professors, which probably never happens, but they think they are. Okay. When you are in class, how much do you feel the pull of the phone as a distraction?
I would say hearing that vibration is definitely like a pressure. You know, it's kind of it's like it's pulling at you, and you're thinking about what it might be or things like that. And I think that as a college student, you can manage that a little bit easier. You kind of are more able to curate your online experience. But especially as an elementary school student, I can imagine just not being able to handle that. You feel like you have this whole space that is full of attention and validation, and it's just, you know, that's a lot of pressure. I can't imagine handling that at that age.
How often do you see your fellow students and think, They're distracted. They're not locked into what's going on here.
I would say in classes, even just, I don't know, I see like people even on their MacBooks, like there's still iMessage or there's things like that. I think it is helpful to have, even just to have, not allow students to have their laptops out sometimes, because I've had professors emphasize that taking notes with your handwritten notes help you to retain information more effectively and things like that. And I would attest to that actually as well. It's helped me.
Yeah, Professor, you were nodding about the laptops here. I would assume, and this is again where I'm a little outdated here, laptop means not as distracting as a mobile phone, smartphone.
Yeah, well, so here's a good example. I teach a lot of classes, including many that Regan has taken with me, in our labs. And so they have a computer that's provided by the school. And so my policy for those classes is do not pull out your personal laptop and set it up in front of the lab computer. And so their laptops stay in their bags unless, you know, for some reason a lab computer's not working. But if we're providing that lab computer, it is specifically for what we're doing in class, and phones and laptops that are personal are to stay in their bags.
I see the phone ringing. Listeners, there's lots of ways to distract the host this hour, if you like. You can tweet at the program. I'm at Evan Dawson, and producer Megan Mack is M Mack Media. You can email the program, connections@wxxi.org. You can call 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free, 844-295-8255, 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. I want to know if you're worried about this. And this distraction, I suspect we're talking about classrooms. You probably feel it when you're out with your friends, when you go out to dinner with your family, in your home spaces and settings. Maybe there's no-go zones for mobile technology. But we're focused a little more intently on the classroom this hour. And Regan, I do want to ask you if you think I'm being too optimistic when I think, you know, we are exiting the age of infancy with social media and with smart technology. We've had this decade where we've kind of run wild with it, but we see the harm that it can cause, and we are going to, as a society, learn to kind of put a brake on. We're not going to get rid of it. We're not going back to that part of our lives where it wasn't there all the time, but we're going to use it better. We're going to change our behavior. Am I just totally just naive here?
No, I would absolutely have to agree with that. I think that we have to be intentional about the way we curate our online experience. And I even think that could be something that parents could start to incorporate with their kids. I have heard parents before in my experience say that a cell phone is a tool, not a toy. And I think that's really important. I've even seen on social media recently, just talking about how we can get into patterns of what we're seeing online. So if you are on Instagram and you're scrolling through photos and everyone who you are following looks like you and behaves like you and is living a very similar life to you, and it's more about kind of diversifying that experience and following people who maybe challenge you or who look differently than you, because I think that can impact a lot of mental health aspects of things. If you are, just looking at people who you want to be or things like that, I think that it's important to do that as well.
Dr. Nafsaria, what should parents be doing with kids and how young in terms of having these conversations and trying to set either boundaries or understandings of the possible risks here?
So, for, first of all, I'll just say that I think parents need to resist the urge to give their kids tablets, smartphones, et cetera, at young ages. There's a movement out there that is urging parents to wait until at least eighth grade. My own kids didn't have cell phones and all until high school, and so on. So the fewer pressure, the less pressure there is coming from your kids' friends, right? The easier it becomes that you know, they're not on social media, et cetera. I want to highlight what was just said, that you know, when you look at social media, you're generally seeing the highlight reel of people's lives. So it's easier to feel that everyone else has it way more together, that they're doing so much better work than you are, et cetera, et cetera. Give me a break. It's the highlight reel, right? Some people will post about the downs, but a lot of people won't. And so it's very easy to feel bad about yourself. And this whole fear of missing out, you know, sometimes you need to ask yourself, is it really that important that I be involved in that conversation right at that moment when it's happening? And so on. And I think parents for their high school age kids, middle school kids, et cetera, sometimes need to help provide an out for kids. I see a lot of sleep problems from kids who are getting notifications, text messages, et cetera, at night, and their friends are asking them, why didn't you respond to me at, you know, 2 a.m. or whatnot? And I tell parents, provide some social cover for your kid. So that way they can say, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't respond. My parents are mean and don't let me have my phone in the room, right? So then it becomes the parent's fault, and it gives them that cover to say, you know what? I want to sleep at night. Stop bothering me.
Well, before I grab your phone calls, Professor Stacey, you, especially on the pressure from, well, how come you're not responding? It's like, yeah. I don't know, I was in class, maybe. Am I allowed to be in class? How about that?
Yes.
2 a.m. is one thing that Dr. Nafsari brings up, but as a professor, you're probably thinking, you do not have to respond right now.
Yeah.
Maybe there, we need a shorthand for in class, you know.
Yeah, well, it's like the that automatic driving notification that your phone will send now if you turn it on. We need one for class. I'm like, sorry, I'm in class. And you can send, like, automatic messages back to a missed phone call, right? But we don't really have a good tool to do that for texting.
Yeah, it's a great point. And Dr. Nafsari makes me think, as a parent myself, I'm thinking about, what do I talk about with my son? Mm-hmm. I'm now thinking, after this conversation, I'm also eventually, and maybe sooner than later, going to have conversation with his groups of the parents of his groups of friends. Like, yeah. Hey, just so you know, we can link arms and decide early on here. We don't have to go down this road, because one of our kids gets a cell phone at age 8, they're all going to want it. Mm-hmm. At age 9, at age 10. Oh. And it becomes so much harder to kind of fight back against it. Not that we can't say no. Parents can say no. But I think having those conversations, we all think about, well, what do we talk about with our kids? What do we talk about with our fellow parents? That's such a good idea. I like this idea of a movement, but now I'm starting to feel curmudgeonly. So you want to jump in there, Dr. Nafsari?
No, I think it's a great point. And I think the other thing to also recognize is, what are we modeling as adults? You know, if our kids see us, you know, at the dinner table, you know, constantly reaching for our phones because we're getting a message, or when they're trying to talk to us that we're pulling it out and texting or whatever the case may be, that does send a message about what's acceptable. You know, they're watching carefully. So if you look at the excellent American Academy of Pediatrics digital media guidelines, which if you go to healthychildren.org and type in digital media or screen use or whatever, you'll find them. So much of what's in there, and this covers like infancy all the way up through teenagers, says we have to be good models and explain to kids what's an issue. If I'm texting because there's you know, a work-related reason, when I happen to be with my kid, I'll say to them, sorry, I have something here that I need to respond to around work. I try to explain to them why I'm prioritizing the device in front of them for a brief moment, and then kind of say, okay, I'm done now, you know, and do that. So those sorts of models and explaining that, you know, yeah, this is life. Sometimes those priorities happen, but they're hopefully not frequent.
So let me get some of our listener feedback, because we got a wide range of interests. And I think a fellow curmudgeon, Tom, wants to start. Go ahead, Tom. Are you there, Tom?
You mean Con?
go ahead, Con.
All right, okay, good. Listen, I'm an old geezer. I have to agree with you almost 100%, which is rare. But a couple of minutes ago, you said something about the joy, the doctor did, about the joy and the dopamine that even a 2-year-old gets when he sees the images change on the screen. What I want to know, what about the other side of the scale about the frustration that people feel, especially older people like myself, when they can't make the blasted thing work and they're changing the programs every 6 months, which means you've got to buy either more apps or you've got to buy a new instrument. So, but I'd like to know about the frustration level that people are supposed to be able to take when they don't get the thing to work the way they think it should.
Well, Tom, thanks for the phone call. Sounds like you got a little bit of FOMO going on, which, by the way, that's a term I didn't know until recently.
FOMO, do you know JOMO?
Well, hold on. FOMO is fear of missing out.
What's correct.
JOMO? What's that?
Joy of missing out.
Oh, yeah. See? Yeah. Tom, I have never heard that. Tom, embrace the JOMO. Go ahead, Doctor. I'm sorry. What would you tell Tom?
I would say, Tom, I completely agree with you. It's ironic. I'm actually at a meeting right now where we just moved to an online platform to handle all the documents that we need to review and so on. And everyone's fumbling and not sure how to make it go. And we're like, wasn't paper easier? And of course, I'm sitting there going, no, because we were FedExing pounds and pounds of paper all over the country. I actually prefer it this way. But, I think that's an issue sometimes that for software and hardware manufacturers, I think to a certain extent, they sometimes feel trapped, right? If I don't come up with something new, then no one will buy or upgrade, and I won't generate more profits and so on and so forth. So sometimes they're I think, changing things that aren't necessarily broken because this idea that, you know, we have to have something new and different out there. And sometimes it's not well done. So something that you knew how to do suddenly becomes a mystery.
Hmm. Well, let me turn to Jane next on the phone. It's always a good phone call. Go ahead, Jane.
Thank you. To go further with what was just said about coming up with something new, it's a little bit like planned obsolescence, or at least the appearance that this is old and this new thing is the cutting edge. And so that makes money, planned obsolescence. We've had that around for a long time. But getting back to devices are said to be to provide intermittent reinforcement, the same thing that gambling provides. And you have 50 calls in a day, one or two of them might be worth it answering. And so the idea is you've just got to answer every one. It could be a good phone call. And what it does is it renders you really passive. You're at the behest of the device. It controls you. And that's one aspect that I really don't like. Also, it has no place in a classroom. And I'm wondering if we could just extend that list and make it socially unacceptable eventually, like we did with cigarettes. There were certain places slowly that you could not smoke. And you can't use a device in the movies, at a concert, in church, in a theater. When you're out to dinner, like you said with someone, leave the damn device in the car. Leave it in the car if you want to have dinner with me. Also, I want the teachers to think about, would we have ever allowed children to bring transistor radios into the class? Because a good song could come on. And it's the same type of distraction that's so easily available. Thank you very much, Evan.
Jane, always nice to hear from you. Thank you very much. I want to touch on one aspect of Jane's call with all of our guests, and we got a lot of feedback to work through. People are fired up about this. Jane said that she compared it to gambling, which has intermittent reinforcement, these different mechanisms that get you to keep coming back, keep coming back, keep coming back. We know that video game makers are better than ever at figuring out how to, well, you're going to level up, or you need to do this daily task, and if you don't, then some sort of progress is lost. They're better than ever at figuring out how to get you to stay engaged with it. And so I think that comparison's good. When it comes to the notifications, it's kind of that way too. That's what Insta and Twitter and everything else are doing if you've got your notifications on. Well, you've got to keep checking. You've got to keep engaged with it. And this is how Katie Rossman, the New York Times reporter who flagged this initial story, responded to the whole sort of hubbub that came out of this. This is what she wrote. That's a new term, by the way, hubbub. Katie writes this. She says, there's so much to take from this. One thing I echo as a mom of a teenager is how kids get notifications of every last little like or heart on an Insta post or BFF sent via group chat. They let themselves be spammed all day long. That's what this is, spam. The constant buzzing of the phone is crazy making. That's from Katie Rossman, the New York Times reporter. Dr. Nafsaria, I think it's interesting she framed it as teenagers and young students, young adults, allowing, and all of us maybe, allowing ourselves to be spammed. Would you put it that way?
I think that's completely accurate. You know, there's a feature that on Snapchat, and I think it's still there. Maybe Regan can help me if it's not. But that you know, these streaks. You know, how many days did you respond to you know, a thread or something? You know, and I know of kids whose like parents are saying, okay, you can't use your phone on the weekend, or we're going on vacation, no phone or whatever. And they're giving their password to friends so they can maintain their streaks. These streaks don't contribute anything, right? You're not going to put it on your CV. It's not going to help you get a job, you know, et cetera. But it's this feedback loop of, ooh, you participated, you participated. There's even some work showing that the colors on the screen, the bright reds and blues and things like that, are designed to kind of keep you looking back, you know, at the screen, and is there something new? Is there some new notification, et cetera? And this is all aimed at trying to get you to use the devices more and more and more.
Leah, when it comes to the streaks, or Regan, maybe help me out here, because I'm familiar with, you know, the kids who are, and the adults who are playing things like. Oh my gosh! The game that all the young
Words with Friends.
No, Fortnite. Thank you, producer Megan Mack. Fortnite gets you coming
Fortnite?
Back with all these different benchmarks all the time. I mean, they get you coming back. Mm-hmm. You have to play every day. You have to do this by the end of the week. You have to do so many tasks. It's similar. I don't know about the streaks that what Dr. Nafsaria is talking about. What's the streaks when it comes to either posts or responding or threading?
I think it's almost like a competition between friends. Like, is your streak longer? Like, my streak with this person is the longest.
Streak with what? What are we doing?
There's just numbers. And every day.
Like liking posts or like what? Or
no, it's so Snapchat sending photos back and forth.
Oh.
So you have to send someone a picture and they have to send you one back. And that's, you've gotten your number for the day. And the number increases by each day that happens. A photo sent back through the app. And especially, I think, like high school students and things like that, they're sending these photos back and forth and trying to get the highest number and not break the streak.
I promise no judgment. Do you do that?
I have them, but I don't maintain them. So
okay.
When I use the app, they automatically go up, but I'm not.
And I'm a streak wrecker, because in social media class, I make them take a midterm, which is 48 hours off of all social media, and they have to document that in an analog way. So they have to handwrite or type their basically journal entries. And Regan has taken this class. Mm-hmm. But when I announced...
Were they supposed to do this in a cave?
Hopefully. But when I announced that it was going to be 48 hours, there was an outcry, because streaks were going to be ruined, and I didn't know what that was.
Oh, so you had to learn about streaks at that point.
I don't use Snapchat for very good reasons.
Well, our colleague Veronica Volk received some serious social media heat when last month on this program she said the age of Snapchat is past. She was informed that is not true. And Regan, it's snap. People are still, is it snapping? Is that the verb snapping?
Snapping,
people are
yeah.
still snapping?
Yep. And it's called, people often use the term brush. If you send a Snapchat and someone doesn't respond to you, they've brushed you effectively.
Like brush you off? Is that like the shorthand?
Yeah.
So you get brushed.
Shorthand for brushing off. Yeah.
Like
but,
ghosting.
I wouldn't say it's gone yet. I have some friends who have stopped using it as much, but, still around.
Yeah.
Okay. So, a ton of feedback. So we've got to get our only break of the hour, and we're going to come back, and we're just going to get as many of your phone calls, maybe your tweets. You can't snap me. I don't know how to do that. But otherwise, we'll get as much feedback as we can. You just heard Regan Wagner, an English and Communications and Media major at Nazareth College. Professor Leah Stacey from Nazareth College is with us. And Dr. Dipesh Nafsaria, professor of pediatrics at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health. Much more of your feedback next. Coming up in our second hour, Jeopardy! Host Alex Trebek announced this week that he has stage 4 pancreatic cancer. He plans to fight it. He understands it is a rough prognosis, but he's going to do what he can to beat the odds. That has us not only wanting to pay tribute to Trebek, but also talk to those who've been on Jeopardy! 4 Rochesterians in studio next hour, talking about the Jeopardy! Experience, everything you've wanted to know about the game show. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Before your feedback, our guests in studio just want to make one point, and I think it's a fair one, because Jane's phone call, she brought up transistor. Would you bring in transistor radios into the classroom, sort of hearkening back to different days? But I do think there's a lot of understandable consternation about social and about digital technology. It's not all bad, Professor Stacey, is it?
Yeah, I'm going to let Regan jump in here.
Sure. So I think one of the things that I've liked the most about Professor Stacey's class actually has been, we'll begin class by saying, what's new on social media today? And then we'll talk about the news that's happening, what we're gaining more. So to look on that positive side, that more of functionality of the media. That helps me to appreciate it a little bit more, I think.
Yeah, and I think just the skills that I'm trying to build with my students, a lot of times we do need our phones in class. They're, you know, building social campaigns for a client, or they are learning. I guess now I have to teach you guys how to turn off your notifications.
Yeah.
Which is something I didn't know, but we'll add that.
Absolutely.
But we're learning how to use all of these channels in professional ways. And I think that is where it could be used really well. You know, marketing for local businesses, we talk a lot about that sort of thing with social. It's not just personal. It's not just about you. It's how can you really build your community with it?
All right. Jeff and Spencerport next on the phone. Go ahead, Jeff.
Hi, the timing of this program couldn't be better for me, so thanks. I teach sociology, and I'm teaching a Soch of Childhood course right now, and we just started talking about ADHD. I threw out to my student as kind of speculations about some social trends that might be affecting ADHD, and technology, cell phones was one of them. And so I was going to ask whether any of the participants and maybe mainly the doctor from Wisconsin, you know, is there any real research out there that demonstrates any links?
It's a good question. Dr. Nafsaria?
Yeah, you know, I'll preface this by saying that ADHD is often used as a fairly broad term to encompass a lot of different, you know, symptoms of inattention and so on. And usually it's, you know, folks who have trouble paying attention or may have hyperactivity symptoms that don't have an otherwise, you know, obvious cause. Having said all of that, we also know that kids who are exposed to fast-paced TV programs at a young age, higher levels of screen use, particularly with entertainment media as opposed to education or whatever, do seem to have more inattention symptoms that are out there. So I think there's something very valid to that assertion, and it's one of the reasons that we do caution parents about thinking about what their children are being exposed to.
Doctor, just as a follow-up, and thank you so much for that phone call. I mean, I think a lot of parents are wondering, even if we don't get a diagnosis, either for ourselves or for our kids, should we be worried about our own capacity to concentrate? And this goes back to that question on building reading skills and concentrating. Is it the case where if there's not a diagnosis, there's nothing to worry about? Or do we have to think it's not just about diagnosis or what needs medication, but just sort of habit forming, Dr. Nafsaria?
Oh, I agree. I don't think you need to say, oh, there's no formal diagnosis here. It's not a problem. It takes a lot for these things to come to the attention of healthcare providers and so on. I think there has to be quite a bit of dysfunction. I think these things can be very habit forming.
On the mental health side as well, Professor Stacey, I know this is something that has been on your mind just in terms of what this constant flood of notifications does. And we've talked about some of the health impacts here. What concerns you the most when it comes to the health impacts here?
Well, I think one of the reasons I started to really focus on this was because of that midterm that I give to the kids. And I've been giving this midterm for 4 or 5 years. And when I read the responses, it's jarring sometimes. You know, they say they felt completely disconnected from their friend group, or they felt like they had nothing else to do. And I'm like, but it's just your social media is gone. There's so many other things to do. But I think I'm sure Regan can add to this too, because I see you post about this stuff, but it's something that college students are starting to think more about, you know, how social and this endless scrolling and these endless notifications are really affecting them, how it's making them feel when they turn their phone off and they're left with their thoughts and the influences of these images and these messages that they've seen. It's really, I mean, we were talking about this in the lobby. We're just getting to the point where there can be quantitative research done on how it does affect someone over a length of time.
Regan, do you feel like you can go 48 hours, 72 hours?
I have. For Professor Stacy's class, I would say it was a strange feeling, which is so weird to be saying. It's a little embarrassing, actually. But you do feel that disconnect. And I don't know. It's you do feel that disconnect. I think we are not used to being bored. That's a big thing. You know, we always have something at hand in our pockets. We don't get bored anymore. I remember feeling bored when I was younger, but I don't feel it now usually. So it's a big change.
Well, and
I think
go ahead, Dr. Neff. Sorry.
Yeah, I think it's great that you use the term bored. You know, I think we usually associate boredom with being a bad thing. There's some excellent essays and all in the last few months about how boredom should be a part of childhood. And I would even argue for adults, because that also spurs creative play and thinking and all. I'm a distance runner, and people sometimes say to me, how can you be out there running for such a long period of time and you never use headphones? Don't you get bored?
Don't you get bored?
Like, and actually, I say I do some of my best thinking. Being alone with my thoughts and the road, it's actually great.
Yeah,
I mean, see, if you're used to it, you won't do it.
Yeah, I'm not a distance runner like you, Dr. Nipsari, but I cannot run without a device. But usually because I'm catching up on my podcast because I don't have time otherwise. But other than that, yeah, I mean, I don't really want to be. Sometimes just music, I say. But I love the idea of being sort of free with your thoughts and disconnecting. And I need to do it more often myself. You know, 500 hours of live radio a year means a lot of booking and rebooking and reading and researching. And I'm sure I get overwhelmed, and I'm sure I make choices that I end up looking back and say, that was too much. So this isn't just about high school students, middle school students, college students. You know, Regan, you say you're sort of embarrassed to say you would feel weird. You don't have to feel embarrassed. I mean, there's the adults around you would feel weird. This is the world that we've created and normalized to extend a theme from yesterday. What used to feel extreme now feels kind of normal. But Rich wants to jump in and say, where are the parents here? Go ahead, Rich.
Well, how you doing, Evan?
You're very good.
I think in a sort of strange way, the parents contribute to this. Because all of a sudden there is this absolute need for parents to have instant ability to contact their child wherever that child is. And there's been a lot of problems in schools where parents have come in and complained that their child can't have the phone in the class and all this. I want, you know, just in case, unfortunately, something unfortunate happens, they want that child to be able to get in touch with them. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I think that's the parents are becoming a part of this problem, too. This need to have this umbilical cord on their child almost gives that child an excuse to have that phone at all times.
Rich, that's a really good point, and that connects to what we said at the top of the hour. If you're just joining us, we're here because New York Times reporter Katie Rossman flagged a photo that presumably a high school teacher took after asking her students just for one classroom period, to turn up their phones, monitor all the different notifications they get, and they got more than 1,200 across all these different forms of media, texting, the different apps, etc. I mean, it was just an absurd amount, I think most of us feel. Like it's just a lot. And the response to this included teachers who were writing in to say, this happens all the time, and sometimes the parents are upset if we take the phones away. We put the phones in a basket. And a teacher said, look, I've got parents who think they should be able to FaceTime with their kids in the middle of classrooms. I've talked to camp directors, summer camp directors, who say, okay, a week of summer camp. You would assume the kids are going to really struggle without their phones. And some do. You know who struggle more? The parents who think, well, if I can't text in the day, how do I know they're okay? You know, you didn't used to text. We used to just cut the cord a little. We used to be okay. The parents struggle more than the campers do. Dr. Nafsaria, what's the lesson here?
Well, I think, one, this is a symptom of helicopter parenting, right? The parent who has to hover over what their kid's doing at every moment. And I agree, it is a little silly. I play camp doctor at a summer camp for a week every year that is a screen-free camp. And The kids actually do okay, and the parents, I think, you know, they know this up front, so they're ultimately okay with it. Having said that, you know, I will also say there are times, we had to take away my daughter's cell phone for a while as a consequences for something she shouldn't have been doing, and you know, my wife and I both said to each other privately, "Huh, it's kind of annoying that we can't just drop her a quick text message to ask her a question," and so on. And I will also add that same daughter is actually studying abroad as a 15-year-old in Australia as I speak, and it is kind of nice that when she has a question about, like, "Hey, I have this debit card and yep. X happened. Help, Dad! I don't know what to do about that." It's kind of nice to be able to still continue that link of parenting. However, I don't expect her to be at my beck and call like every last moment.
Yeah. Professor, any issues with parents in this one?
It's
a little less on I would assume a little less on the college level.
But. Can I talk about my mom?
Your mom.
No, she's still, I mean, I'm in my 30s, and still if I'm traveling, she's like, "Just drop me a text when you're there."
Well, but that a lot of people do that.
So sweet. It's so sweet. And I know she's probably not listening because she's at work, but I love you, Mom. But I remember that I didn't have a cell phone until college. So she was never really able to keep tabs on me in that way.
Yeah, and now the idea, it's not just that, hey, text me, you're driving home, the weather's rough, text me when you get there.
Yeah.
It's parents thinking if a kid's at summer camp or wherever, if I haven't heard from you in 4 hours, then I assume there's something wrong.
Yeah.
When you know, that is a new thing thanks to technology.
Sure is.
And so we're all grappling with that. Yeah, go ahead.
Speaking of FOMO, right, the fear of missing out, I remember just a couple of years ago at camp, the entire Pokemon Go phenomenon happened during that 4-week walk, and I said, "This is going to be great. These kids are going to come back home from their 4 weeks at camp and be like, what happened? What is this thing everyone's talking about?"
Well, as the parent of a Pokemon goer, I can say that he loves it, but we talk about addiction all the time, and he understands when we're done, we're done. Well, you know, we're putting limits on everything, and that's it, and there's a lot of things to do. Augie, got to keep it tight. Go ahead, Augie.
Hi, yeah, I was curious. We've talked a lot about communication and reading and writing skills, and I feel that oftentimes, especially in adolescence, text message communication so over-dominates phone calls and maybe even face-to-face conversation. So I just wanted to open the discussion about how we verbally communicate with one another and how verbal communication is being affected through having so much of our communication go through text messages where meaning can be ambiguous and there isn't inflection and whatnot. And so I wanted to see what the panel had to think about communicating through text from an early age rather than through verbal communication.
This is such a good point that we've done an entire hour separately on it. And Augie, we'll try to flag that for our listeners. It's a really good point. What do you think, Professor Stacy?
I just am thinking of this meme that says, "The best time to call me is text message."
So you're one of those people like, "Oh my gosh, someone left a voicemail."
Well, I'm just really thankful that now I can tap that voicemail and see the text.
Oh my gosh. Come on.
I'm a writer. What do you want?
No, we're laughing, but he is making a good point, isn't he?
He's making an excellent point.
I'm in the same point, yeah.
I like to check my voicemails quarterly. So so if you haven't heard back from me, listeners,
yeah,
it's probably because
know.
We left a voice message. Yeah, I see. We've all sort of. But I do think Augie's broader point is an important one here. Do you ever run into issues with that, Regan?
With
just understanding, like, either a text message misconstrued, or do you feel beyond that? Do you feel like some friends are so into digital communication that you do a little less in terms of face-to-face or verbal?
Yeah, absolutely. I actually had a close friend of mine who had to kind of condition me into answering phone calls. She would call me over and over and over, and over a course of months I've adapted to it. But I even think that people my age have started, like, capitalizing certain letters and adding emphasis to things, which is really interesting because it's almost like developing another form of language using different, punctuation and things like that. So things can definitely be misconstrued depending on what you've learned.
Our colleague Veronica Volk dropped some serious education on us the last time we had this conversation on it. I'm going to go back and listen to that program now. It's so true, though. It is like an entirely new form of communication. And you talk about FOMO. There are adults like me who read some of this stuff and go, yeah, I didn't get the context here at all. So there's a real risk there. Dr. Nafsari, about 30 seconds. Leave us with some ideas as we go forward about what you want parents and students to think about when it comes to the distraction of technology in classrooms.
So what I'll say is that technology is a tool like any other. We've had these same anxieties about even things like writing. Plato went on and on about how writing was going to ruin people's brains and whatever. So I think it's asking ourselves, how is it getting in the way? And is technology serving us, or are we serving technology? So learning how to turn off these unnecessary notifications, et cetera, and thinking about your long-term goals and what really matters, I think is really the key thing. And that's what we should be talking to children about.
Dr. Nafsari, thanks for the time this hour. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
What are you going to do for your class? Any changes you're going to make going forward here?
Well, I'm going to teach them how to turn off notifications.
Yes! surprise, isn't it?
It is a surprise.
That is a surprise.
I'm going to show you right after this, Regan.
Can you please? Yeah.
Leah Stacey is a professor in professional practice in English and communication at Nazareth College. Thank you for being here.
Yeah.
And Regan Wagner, a student at NAS, thank you. Thanks for taking the time to share your thoughts.
Thank you, Evan.
We appreciate it. More connections coming up.